Hello there, this is Dave Allen, Wizard Gold, and you're listening to the Mach20 Cube podcast. This is the podcast where we talk to Mac users about what they actually do with their Macs and their iOS devices. None of those silly rumours. Well, I have been doing my usual stuff this week with using Scrivener and various bits and pieces and getting into workflows on my iPad and having a lot of fun with my Apple stuff. This is podcast 121, and today I've got a guest from New Zealand, and his name's Alistair Jenks, and we have a real good chat. I think you're going to enjoy this. Let's get into the interview right now. Okay, so we're kind of half sort of started already. So you're Alistair Jenks, and you're in New Zealand, and you're enjoying summer and late evening there, and it's warm and lovely, and I'm here in Spain and it's kind of cool. So tell us about what sort of Mac things that you what Mac products and Apple products that you have, and tell us what it's like being a Mac user, an Apple user in New Zealand.
Well, what do I have inside the house? There are four Macs and four iPhones and two iPads. I think that's it in total. There's also four people in the house, so that's a Mac and an iPhone each, and then a couple of iPads between us.
Well, if it had been just yourself, we'd have been overdoing it just a little bit.
Just a little. I've never had more than one Mac myself. I'm sort of toying with the idea of a Mac Mini as a media center at some point, but We haven't got there yet.
I had two Macs at one time. I've got my iMac on the desk, and I used to have a MacBook as well, but I gave that to my son. And it was quite good, really. I mean, in the end, I think I had both of them on my desk at the same time. And you had that the application you could use where you sort of just used one keyboard and trackpad or mouse, and you can slide across the two. It's quite handy, it was.
Yeah, I tried to get that running between my work PC and my Mac, but the VPN wasn't going to let it happen, unfortunately.
It worked really well, sort of. In fact, what I did was I used to have it so that it would only go across when held down a function key, because otherwise sometimes it would go across and you wonder where the hell the mouse had gone or the pointer had gone to, you know?
Yeah. No, the reason I've never had two Macs on my desk is because I could, I'm only on my second Mac of all, and the first one I sold for, I think it was $400. I mean, that's New Zealand dollars, but that was 3, 4, 5 years old maybe at the time. I can't remember now.
So you got some decent money for it when you sold it then, so?
Yeah. Well, I sold it to a friend, so I sold it at quite a low price to him. And, I think it was $400 after 4 years. So for the 20-inch white Core 2 Duo iMac.
So are you making your Macs last a long time then?
Yeah, my current one is a 2011 MacBook Pro, and I was sort of close to thinking, hey, I should replace that. It's out of Apple Care now. And in the end, I just bought a new screen. So it's my poor man's Retina iMac is a simple HD 24-inch screen to stick next to it. So it seems new to me. It's nice and big and bright compared to the laptop screen. So that'll hold me over. And to be fair, my wife's Mac is 2 years older than mine, so hers should be next.
Yeah. Then that doesn't always come into it. What you can do is get a new one for yourself and pass yours on to her, couldn't you?
Yeah.
It's tempting, isn't it? God, admit it.
She had the first Mac in the household. I actually bought it for her for Christmas 1 year. And when she decided to replace that, I said, well, you can get by with this. And she said, how big can they come? It's like, I want the biggest, brightest one that they've got. So I might not get away with that.
Do they have Macs, some iPhones and some iPads in there as well? Do you sort of kind of work it all together and everything? Are you making good use of this handoff and sharing stuff across between them and so on?
I try, David. I try. It can be challenging. My MacBook Pro is just old enough that some of that technology doesn't work. I do keep leaping out of my chair when my cell phone rings. I'm on leave from work at the moment, but my boss is still working and he calls me when he gets the odd problem. And I'm sitting at my Mac and the darn thing starts ringing and I'm leaping out of my chair thinking, and grabbing my phone to answer it and then thinking, I could have just clicked on a button on the Mac. So I know it works. I have it working, but my brain isn't trained to make use of these things because I'm just not used to them.
I have to tell you, I have the same problem too.
I do have the, you know, the iCloud stuff. iTunes Match, I'm a fan of. Not a huge fan. I mean, I won't go around preaching about it, but I find it really good. Pretty much rely on it. I like the fact that, you know, I can just be walking around town with my phone and think, I haven't heard that song for a while. For what, you know, for whatever reason, it crops up in my head. And I can just listen to it. And I love that. It's really, really good. And the other key thing that I'd wanted for years with my iPods, I always had more music than I could fit on the iPod. And I, you know, considered downsampling to ridiculously low bit rates to fit it all on, but I was never really happy with that. If you walk into a music store of some description, and yes, they still do exist, and you see a CD on the shelf and think, do I have that one? It's really, really useful to have your entire library in your pocket, you know, at least just to scroll through and see if you have that particular album before you decide whether you're going to buy it or not.
Yeah, it'd be nice as well if you could do that sort of thing. We could barcode scan them, wouldn't it, and check if they're there or not, wouldn't it? But I suppose doing a search would be handy enough as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because, I mean, you can go by artist. It's pretty straightforward. And I think the thing with barcodes is there's different editions as well.
Right.
So, you know, some artists will release best of compilations. Goodness me. You know, best of, greatest hits, gold hits, all these sorts of things. And some of those all come from one artist and have remarkably similar track listings but aren't actually the same.
Okay, right. Yeah, I've never really looked into sort of getting iTunes Match because I used to listen to music quite a lot. But these days, I tend to, when I'm working at my computer, I tend to sit in silence, mainly because I'm doing dictation often with using Dragon Dictate, and it would kind of mess things up if I had music playing in the background.
All of a sudden, yeah, you get some rather interesting words appearing on the page.
Well, I could,
depending on
I?
What you're listening to.
Especially if you listen to that one, Akon, there's some rude words in that one.
Yeah, I didn't listen to, I mean, I used to listen to a lot of music in the days before smartphones, you know, especially with my iPod. But in my iPod days, I started getting into podcasts. And for several years, I had been listening mostly to podcasts and very little to music. But I tell you what, when certain things go on in your life that sort of make you stop and think, it's amazing what music can do to change your mood. So I'll often be found now strolling down the waterfront here in Wellington, especially if it's a nice day, with my latest favourite music blasting in my ears, and, you know, to heck with podcasts.
Yeah, I tend to listen to podcasts an awful lot as well, but it's true what you say about music sort of being evocative. I mean, I can listen to certain tracks and it reminds me of certain periods of my life.
Yeah.
However long ago they were as well.
Yeah, well, for me, it's there is that, but it's usually some of the newer stuff that I found that I end up listening to, but it just improves my mood.
So tell us, what versions of the iPhone and iPad are you on these days?
I have a shiny new iPhone 6 Plus, which I love.
Oh, you went for the big one.
Oh, yes. My goodness, if you'd been around me while I was deciding on that, you would have been laughing, I'm sure. I ended up with the decision to go with the iPhone 6 Plus was based on a simple premise of go big or go home. And I basically decided I would get a 6 Plus unless I could figure out a reason why I shouldn't.
Okay.
And I didn't. So I did. So hence I have the 6 Plus. And I have to say, my family's iPhones, one of my sons got my hand-me-down iPhone 5, and my wife and my son have a 5C. And every now and then I'm handed one to sort out some problem, and it's tiny. It looks like a postage stamp to me. It's amazing. It wasn't that long ago, especially with the 5S, the 5 rather, that I was, you know, using that actual phone. And now any one of them gets handed to me and it's like, oh my God, I feel like I've got to sort of squeeze my fingers in to fit them on the screen.
Yeah, I kind of have the same problem because my wife's using the iPhone 4 at the moment still. And it seems kind of small. Although I haven't said that, it's kind of chunky as well. So it doesn't feel quite so small maybe.
Yeah. And on the iPad, I had the original iPad as soon as it came out here. And that's still in the house. It sort of gets used for, I think my wife uses it for a few games and as a bedside clock. And then I had an iPad 2, and I eventually upgraded that to the original Retina iPad Mini. And I mean, the form factor was just a case of let's try it. I couldn't really decide whether, you know, big or small was right for me. And I do like the form factor in that you can just sort of, especially if you're reading, you can hold it in one hand comfortably. Well, I can, yeah, with fingers on one side and thumb on the other. But I love the Retina screens. I really do. I don't think I would ever consider buying a new device, no matter what it is, from Apple without a Retina screen anymore.
Does that include the iMac as well?
Yes, of course.
I know. I saw one in a shop the other day, actually, and I thought it looked quite good, but I don't know.
Amazing.
I don't know if I'd be able to justify it at the moment, really, because it's a hell of a lot of money as well.
It is, but I worked it out. This MacBook Pro that I've got, when I bought it, I got the high-def screen, which is, 1680 by 1050. It's the same as the 20-inch iMacs were, and possibly even the same as the 21-inch. So it's got the high-def glossy screen, and I bought the SSD from Apple, and then I bought a data doubler kit from OWC and put a second hard drive in it. And so I sort of spent a little bit of money sort of making it a little bit higher end. It's not the top of the line. It's the 15-inch. It's not the top of the line one processor-wise, but it's middle of the line with some extras. And to buy a Retina 27-inch iMac today is about the same number of dollars as I just spent on that laptop, 3 years ago.
Okay.
So it's not that expensive, really. Yeah.
It is kind of nice when you can do a bit of upgrades to sort of bring them on a little bit, because, like, for instance, my iMac, it's 3 years old, and, you know, sometimes you think at 3 years, you think, oh, okay, well, it's about time to get a new one. But what I did was I put an SSD on it via Thunderbolt, because I didn't want to go inside because it's still got an Apple Care, you see.
Right.
And I'd like to be able to take out the DVD drive, but that's a big job as well. So I'm leaving that alone for the moment too. And everything's just great with having the extra SSD. Makes it much faster.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I got the 128 gig SSD in the MacBook Pro, which is barely enough. I think 256 would be fine. I mean, even just as primarily a boot drive with no real amount of data on it, I'm still having to manage it in one. However, I recently swap out the 750 gig spinning drive that I put inside the MacBook for a 480 gig SSD. So if I'm running that thing with nothing plugged in, it runs silently, which is kind of cool, and sometimes, you know, if it's hanging for whatever reason, you wonder if it's actually doing anything, but
yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah, I kind of went with the getting a small one first of all. I bought an SSD. It's one from Crucial. It's quite a decent one from Crucial, and it is a 240, I think it is.
Yeah, anyway, I think that's about the right sort of minimum size in reality for a
The iMac, I didn't feel it was big enough, so I ended up sort of taking that one out, and I got the 480 instead because they'd come down in price so much.
Yes, yeah. The 480 I got probably 6 months ago, and that was definitely the sweet spot for price.
Yeah, so let's move on to the software that you use. I mean, you say you're a podcaster, so obviously you do have podcasting things with audio and stuff like that. So what sort of apps are you using for that? And obviously there's going to be a lot of other apps that you use for various other bits and pieces to bring it all together, as it were.
Yeah, I'm sort of no fixed abode podcast-wise. I don't have one of my own at the moment, although I started podcasting back in August 31st, 2006. There you go. I can still remember the date. And when I started on a PC, and when I switched to Mac, I think I tried GarageBand early on, but sort of never quite figured it out. And then I came across this software called Ubercaster, which is unfortunately defunct now. The developer had health problems and had to give up on the development, and you can't begrudge him that. And so as Apple have released new operating systems, it has slowly, you know, become unstable, and then in some cases doesn't work at all. And for the type of podcasting that I was doing, which I was doing pretty much a live and one take recording, which was a couple of jingles and me talking and between three and six music tracks, or sometimes occasionally more. And it had this great ability that you could run it as a live recording, where you just had like a, you know, similar to Soundboard, where you could just fire off the tracks as you need them. And there was a level of automation in there, and it even had built-in Skype calling and recording, but that never quite worked very, very well. And the beauty of it was that when you finished, you had what looked like a GarageBand project with all the individual songs on different tracks and stuff like that. And then you could go and edit it. So if you stuffed up the timing, you could just tweak the timing. And it was absolutely brilliant. And I loved it. And I'm so sad that it's gone away. I'm thinking of getting back into the music podcasting, but I'm struggling with what to use. And I've been playing with GarageBand in the last couple of days to see if it'll work. But it's not going to be quite the same without being that live in one take.
I'll tell you something approach. I think you're going to like. Bus Jock on the iPad. It's a super little application it is, and you can do some amazing stuff with it.
I have to have a look. I have this thing in my head that the iPad's just not going to do it, but maybe
well, the
I'm
only thing that you wouldn't be able to do with it is if you wanted to do the Skype interviews with it as well, because you can't sort of bring in recordings like that. But if you've got your sound bites and if you've got your jingles and buffers and all that sort of thing, it works great for that. It really does.
Oh, I'll have to have a look at that one and see if it'll tick the boxes for me.
I've tried it and I like it. It's really good. I suppose it depends on if you're. I think your iPad should be up to which version you're in, the mini iPad.
So it's the original Retina Mini. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's fairly grunty.
I think it should work on there fairly well, actually, because there's even a version that works on the iPhone.
Okay. But definitely have to check.
Because you like doing the sort of performance type of podcast there, that would work pretty good because you sort of do it as you go along. You don't get the thing at the end of it with that software that you were saying where you get it all in separate tracks and so on, but it's not absolutely necessary, you know?
Well, it was very, very handy that, you know, every now and then you'd hit a button and realise you'd hit the wrong button and you could just carry on and fix that timing in post, as it were.
Yeah.
So it was very, very powerful, but I don't think any such thing exists on any platform at the moment.
Yeah, I'll tell you software that as well that you might think about if you're doing it on your Mac is Amadeus Pro.
Yes, I've seen a recommendation for that. I need to check out a whole lot of things. I also need to figure out whether I'm going to do this music podcast again because I was looking through for material today and finding that my original sources of music are much less, shall we say, prolific than they were when I was last recording.
Uh-huh.
So there may not be the material for it.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a lot of cool stuff that I can look at and see what I could make to work.
Yeah, I do all my podcasts on the actually use Twisted Wave to do some stuff when I'm recording on the iPad and the iPhone. But when I'm actually doing it on the Mac and putting the multi-track recording together, then it's got to be Amadeus Pro. And the thing I went for it in the first place that what I really liked about it is when you're doing the editing and you fluff some words and you want to chop it out, you can sort of get your section that you want to chop out. And chop it out, and it sort of closes the gap. Whereas you don't get that with GarageBand. You chop something out, and it leaves the space, and you have to manually move things together after that. And it's really, really annoying when you've got lots of edits to make.
Especially when you realise you've got it slightly wrong, and you have to undo and redo, and yeah, it's a little messy.
The joys of podcasting.
So other apps that I use, because I just not only the music podcasting, also do guest slots on a few things, and I've guest hosted Alison Sheridan's NoCellacast a couple of times, so putting that together is very much GarageBand. But like right now I'm doing a backup recording for you with Pieto, which is a great, great little app. It's pretty hard to do anything wrong with that. I've got Fission, which I use for basic editing of such files. If I record a piece from script for Alison, then I'll usually fluff the words and redo paragraphs. So I use Fission to just go back and chop those out. And that'll even put tags in and do the final conversion to the whichever format I want to output in, etc.
I've not heard of that Fission. I must give that one have a bit of a look myself.
It's a very... I'm not sure I'd call it a powerful sound editor, but it's a very Mac-like sound editor. It's nice to use. It's pretty straightforward, really, but it's you can just select that section, and it's like you said with Amadeus Pro, you can highlight a section, hit delete, and it closes it up, and it even puts a nice little slight rounding of the volume curve on the end of the bits that are left so that it doesn't, you don't get a harsh click on the cut. So it's straightforward for what it does, editing one single waveform, and I quite like it.
What I like about the Amadeus Pro is that when you do the cut, what it will do is it'll do the cut when the sound wave is crossing the zero line. Okay. Ah. And what that means is that is you don't get these clicks that sometimes can happen if it sort of chops it, say, at the top of a wave or the bottom of a wave, and you put the two together and, you know, you will get a sort of kind of jarring sort of click. But if you've got this one, it's got what they call it, I don't know what they call it now exactly, but it's an intelligent sort of cut or something like that. And always, it always works out well.
Yeah, definitely have to check that one out.
Yeah, so what other applications do you use for doing other things? Some, obviously, when you're doing sort of podcasts, you have to do some writing, maybe write a script or something like that.
Yeah, a couple of apps sort of keep coming to the front. I've tried all sorts. I'm one of these people who's a serial tinkerer, as I should have on my gravestone. I tend to get a lot of apps and just try them out, and many of them I like and don't use that often, but two that sort of keep coming back for me, in fact, one I've used today, you gave me sort of an outline of what we were going to be talking about, so I threw together some ideas in MindNode. Now, I did that on the iPad, and now I've got it up in MindNode Pro on the Mac, and I don't know, it's the nice clean look that it gives me that I like. Just simple, clean, coloured lines with, you know, nice clear text and auto layout and that sort of thing. So I like to use that to sort of throw together ideas. And I've actually put together some fairly complex, not scripts, but, you know, bullet point hit lists, as it were, for recording sessions. And if I am going to the scripting level, my favourite one is Byword. And again, you know, I can do it on the Mac or the iPad, and it syncs with iCloud, and I find that really, really useful. And so sometimes I'll write the bulk of the script on the Mac, and then I might be sitting up in bed in the evening reading, and then I'll suddenly think, hang on. And I can flip over to Byword on the iPad and just bring it up and do the quick edit. And then when I go to record on my Mac, it's there again. So it's all, you know, seamlessly copying across between the devices.
It is kind of nice with Byword, actually. It does that iCloud synchronization. It does it really well. I use the mind mapping application iThoughts and iThoughts X, and that does some fairly decent synchronization, but it does it over Dropbox instead. Doesn't work quite so seamlessly in some ways, because you have to push the button on the iPad to send to do the synchronization across, and it still works okay. It works well enough. And of course, I was imagining with I do have MindNode on my Mac, but I don't have it on my iPad. But I should imagine it's quite easy for you to send it out from the mind mapping application as Markdown.
You can split it out as several different. I've not actually had the Mac app for as long as I've had the iPad app, and I find the iPad one easiest because you can just point to where you want the new node and then drag it out, and if you want to move something, you just sort of point at it, and I find that really, really natural that I can just sort of think and it happens, and then, you know, tap and type and then tap somewhere else, and it's just really, really quick, and it allows you to get your thoughts down. I'm less familiar with the Mac app, as I say, I haven't had it that long.
When you're using your iPad there and you're sort of making your mind maps, are you ever tempted to do the sort of using the Siri dictation to get the data in there?
No, I haven't considered that, actually. I have played with the dictation, and I find that it's reasonably accurate for me. The early versions weren't. They absolutely were not. But probably iOS 7, I think it came fairly close. I haven't really tried it in iOS 8 to determine whether it's any better than it was. I'm not sure I would be able to tell. But the one thing that really annoys me about Siri is if I'm walking, it can't understand me. I can slow right down, control my breathing, talk to it. It doesn't have any idea what I'm saying. And in the car, forget it. You know, you might say, play David Bowie, and it says, I'm sorry, I don't know anybody by the name of John Smith. It's like, what? I said, play David Bowie. Nope, we don't know who Karen George is. What? It's just
you could have quite a conversation, really, couldn't you?
Yeah, and far from being the non-distracting thing that you need whilst driving, some swearing at the phone saying, no! And end up, I mean, it's up on a cradle in my line of sight, so I end up just pushing the button and doing it that way. It takes me a couple of kilometres to get all the right hit targets to get through the steps, but I get there eventually.
That's funny, actually, because I've not actually sort of tried using it in the car as yet, the Siri dictation or telling to do things. I must give that a go and see if it works in my car.
Sometimes it does, but a lot of the time I find it is just absolute frustration from one minute to the next. But if I'm in a room, and in fact, the greatest use of Siri for me is we have a toasted sandwich maker that I prefer to use about 4 minutes for my toasties for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put the iPhone on the bench and I hold down the button and I say, set a timer for 4 minutes, and it hasn't failed me yet.
It's pretty good, that, isn't it? I like that. I do that myself.
It's very handy when you've got limited numbers of fingers free, free of food and things like that. So, I mean, there is an oven timer on the other side of the kitchen that's probably easier to use, but hey, I've got Siri.
What do you think about all the sort of Internet of Things, where you go, so HomeKit and everything else like that? Because I've been looking at what's been coming out of CES, and it tends to be something like light bulbs and switches and stuff like that. And I look at them and think, well, you know what, it's going to be harder work to get out the iPhone or the iPad and to set this thing up to do whatever you want to do than it is to get off your bottom and go and switch it on yourself.
Yeah, I agree with that mostly. I would like in my lounge, for example, to be able to set the lights low if I'm watching a movie, or high if I'm sitting there reading a book, or if we're just talking or such. And, you know, if I'm setting the lights low, it'd be kind of useful if you sort of made them a bit more red, and that kind of thing kind of, you know, it appeals to me. But in most rooms in the house, they're either on or off. I agree. And 9 times out of 10, you're either entering or leaving the room when you turn the light on or off. So you're walking past the switch anyway, if it's in a sensible place.
And what, you're using paper books? What's the matter with you, man?
Well, no, to be fair, I'm usually reading on the iPad myself these days, but, you know, could be all sorts of things in play that need full light. I am a fan of LED lights, so, you know, these automated ones tend to be LED, which I like. I mean, the power draw on those things is ridiculously low compared to the old-fashioned bulbs, and I like that concept. And they're actually pretty good these days. I just put 6 new spotlights in the kitchen recently, and I love it. You flick that switch and the whole kitchen is bathed in light.
Do you do a lot of writing on your devices?
Not a whole lot. And the podcast scripting is some of it. I have three or more blogs on various topics. I have an Apple-themed one, which... it gets about a post a month at the moment, although some of those are a bit cheat. Like, there'll be a blog post saying I've appeared on this show, for example. And that's counted in the one a month when I last looked. And I will, you know, wax lyrical about some topic of the moment or some pet hate of mine, like email. And then I've got an aviation-themed one, which I generally just use to, you know, there are friends who have... similar interests to me who will follow that and see when I publish my new photos on Flickr. I usually do a blog post to point out the photos. And then I've got a third one, which is stuff that doesn't fit on either of the previous two. And I think that's all I've got at the moment. I've had various others at various times in the past.
Do you use your mind mapping to get that thing going, to get your sort of ideas together for writing your blog posts?
No, I tend to do it the wrong way. I tend to start at the top and try and finish at the bottom and then go back and actually fix it. And sometimes, not always.
I'll send you a free copy of my book. I've just got a book that's nearly finished, ready to put out on Amazon. And it is The Good and Geeky Writer's Workflow.
Oh,
and
definitely.
I found it to be really, really useful in terms of having a system for getting started at the beginning. In fact, it doesn't have enough beginning. You're getting started wherever. So whether I'm sitting on the sofa, whether I'm sort of out walking or whatever else, I can say, okay, well, I've got my iPad in front of me, I'm on the sofa, let's get writing. I can go straight into using iThoughts and moving on maybe to an outliner. And generally, it's a sort of workflow that takes me down towards Scrivener. And Scrivener's where the sort of the actual writing sort of gets finished off and done and ready to be published and everything. And I've got a nice little system that works pretty well. I'm putting that out as a book.
Oh, that'd be very interesting. Yeah, I do tend to sort of just write, how can I put it, as I think, which is not always terribly coherent. But I do have one habit that I wish a lot more people had. And I have to say that in the stuff that I read online, most people seem to have this, but in my work, goodness me, could people do with this habit? I read what I write. And, you know, I go back and I read it from start to finish. And in doing that, I'll think, well, I'm jumping all over the place, or hang on, that doesn't make sense. And I'll edit it and I will keep going until I've read it from start to finish and think, I'm prepared to put my name to that.
And tell me, when you say you read it to yourself, I mean, do you read it out aloud or just read it in your head?
I just read it in my head, which is probably where I miss the little errors sometimes.
Because I find that reading out aloud is what really gets things working right for me.
I suppose, yeah, if you have to vocalise it, then it has to make more sense than if you're just reading it, skipping over words in your brain without even realising it.
Because when I do my writing, I use Dragon Dictate. And obviously, I make some edits as I go along, because, you know, when you see a word that's obviously wrong, you can go back and change it, you know, vocally. You say, choose such and such a word, and then you say the word again that you want it to be, and usually gets it right the second time if it didn't get right the first time. One or two words I have to actually spell out if they're strange sort of words, or maybe even add them to the vocabulary of the application if it's going to be something I'm using a lot. I'll tell you one thing, it just can't, however, whichever way I do it, you just can't get used to the word Yosemite. It always comes out as something different.
Just say Yosemite.
I know, it sounded a bit about right. My mother was calling it Yosemite the other day when she was talking about her MacBook and stuff. She's just bought an iPhone 5C as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, writing's not a huge pastime of mine, I suppose. So I guess I just dabble in it. But it would certainly be interesting to, you know, take a look at process, because when I do write, it's usually because I want to say something.
Mm-hmm.